Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody. 25 more minutes of the program, Today's Issues, and we thank you for listening to AFR. Hey, we're going to Israel in March. By we, I mean Allison, my wife and I. We're going to be leading our annual tour to Israel. And if you want to go with us, or want at least take a look at our itinerary and the cost and all the things about the tour so you can make your own evaluation, then go to twholyland.com. We're leaving March 12th from New York, and we'll be back March 20th. All right, we're going from New York to Tel Aviv, and then we're seeing the Holy Land. So it's going to be a wonderful time with people who support AFR from all over the country. And so if you want to join us, check that out. TWHolyLand.com. TWHolyLand.com. I would say 3/4 of our tour is full. So, you know, I'm guessing by the end of September, maybe sooner, we'll be out of space for the trip. So find out more information now. TWHolyLand.com. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, just call us, leave us your name and your address, and we'll send that to you. 800-FAMILIES. Is the number, 800-FAMILIES, and then press the number 5, and then it'll ask you for your name and your address. So be sure to do that. All right, Steve Jordahl is with us. Ray's in Kansas City. We're here in Tupelo. Walker's with me today. And Ray is sitting in the chair formerly occupied by your boss.
Steve is.
Steve.
Fred Jackson. What did I say?
Yeah, you said that Ray is sitting here, and I wish he were, because if he were here, then I'd be in Kansas City going down to get some good barbecue in a minute.
It's a deal.
I just made a Joe Biden faux pas.
Good thing you're not running for president. You're already president.
Right. I couldn't make it. I'd be matching Joe faux pas for faux pas.
Yeah, well, it's a hard – I don't know how Donald Trump does it. I really don't. He just seems to have limitless
energy. He just moves on. You never let him see you sweat.
That's true.
That's how Donald Trump operates.
It's true.
All right.
Hey, so. Let's start with some good news. You want to start with some good news?
Sure.
This last weekend was the release of the newest Kendrick brother film called Overcomers. Uh-huh. Ray, have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Have you guys seen it? One of you guys
seen it? I have not.
I have seen it. It is very good.
All their movies are good.
All their movies are good, but they're getting better and better each time they go out. I was talking with Alex Kendrick, who's the star of this.
Alex is the star of everyone.
I know. But he says he sometimes looks back and cringes a little bit at the Flywheel and in the first.
That Flywheel was a great movie.
It was a good movie, but yeah. It was a little.
I know, it's cheesy.
A little cheesy.
Yeah. But the camera work was. They had a cheap camera and everything. We're talking about the movies made by, what's the church name?
Sherwood Baptist Church in Georgia, Atlanta area, I think.
Flywheel had a great storyline.
Yeah. Well, they've all been really well written, but they're getting better and better. And so this one comes out. It is about a basketball coach at a high school and the major manufacturing jobs plant moves out of town and takes with him all of his high school players, and so they lose a lot of students, and he is told not only is he going to be coaching a very diminished basketball team, he's going to be also coaching cross country, which he says he knows nothing about. And so he holds an audition, whoever wants to go out for cross country, and one young woman at this high school came out, and she has asthma.
Do we need spoiler alert here?
No, this is all known. Okay. This is all known. All right. It's all out there. So anyway, it goes through they focus on the identity of who we are in Christ in this movie. But I'm not the only person who's a big fan. I talked to Ted Baer of Movie Guide, and this is what he had to say. Sorry.
Well, I think it's a very good opening for, you know, a film that's reaching out mainly to the Christian audience out there. Now, the Christian audience is gigantic. It has less preaching in it. It's more cohesive. It's better done. I think it's going to have good word of mouth. I think it's going to build for a long time. And I'm I'm a fan of this movie, so I think it's got some really strong elements to it.
And so there's some good recommendations. We don't recommend films here at AFA. I don't want to step across the bound or recommend it. I'll just say that I really enjoyed it.
You know, the one thing I would disagree with on the person you interviewed there, Bear, how do you
Ted.
Say his last
name? Ted Bear.
Right? Yeah, I think this is not a Christian, this is not a targeted Christian audience film. This film was released in theaters across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Pagans can go see the movie. So the theme is a Christian theme, but lost people could end up thinking, well, it's a good storyline, so I'm going to go see it, just like any other movie. And so who knows how many, you know, lost people were witnessed to by going to see this movie. Because they were interested in the storyline.
I saw a picture outside of a movie theater, and I don't remember where it was, but it was in one of these multiplex theaters, and there was a whole group of people. It was after the showing of Overcomer, and they were standing around laying hands and praying on this man who's attended the movie who had cancer and asked for prayer. And it just showed this great group of people right outside the door of the theater as they were coming out.
Is it showing now across the country?
It is showing now across the country.
What's the name of it?
It's called Overcomer. It opened up on 1,700 screens. It cost $5 million to make, and they made $8.1 million in their first weekend. So they're already making money. And this is just the first weekend. It was the number 3 in the box office last weekend.
That's a great start, isn't it, Steve?
It really is. It really is. And I agree with you that it's not necessarily made for, but this is a leap forward in production quality for
they're counting what they're what they mean by that, I think, is they're counting on the base of support for the movie to be the Christian community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a movie that the general audience is would like.
Right. And they'll get good word of mouth. But I tell you, Christians are so appreciative of movies. For so long, it was hard to find anything that was acceptable in there. And I think starting with Mel Gibson
it had to be outside of Hollywood. Facing the Giants is what put the Kendrick brothers on the map.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fireproof. And
then they followed Fireproof and other ones.
Yeah. They've done a really good job. I'll go see anything they make.
It was prior to the Kendrick brothers, it was an untapped market.
It really was.
If you want to call it that.
Yeah, the only other thing comparable to that would have been remember the Billy Graham movies?
Right, right. And a lot of those were ended up being shown in churches and so on. I mean, this is a big deal, Steve. $8 million first weekend. And yeah, I think it's probably true what Ted Bear said, that the majority of that is the Christian audience, but it is big. It says to me that there is truly a market out there for family-friendly, inspirational movies like this.
Yeah, and ones that are explicitly Christian. They don't suffer.
Right.
Next story.
All right. I want to take you to Great Falls, Montana, Cascade County. There, Judge Greg Pinsky had two defendants in front of him. One was named Ryan Patrick Morris, and another was named Troy Allen Nelson. They were on separate charges, but both had done the same thing. On probation, they had stolen valor, which is mean they posed as veterans when they weren't veterans. And they came back. They were each supposed to on probation after serving time in prison, so they had multiple counts of violent felonies and such, but they got a contempt of court, citation. But in addition, this is what he is making them do for the stolen valor. They have to personally handwrite the names of all 6,756 Americans killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. They have to personally handwrite the obituaries of the 40 Montanans killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Personally handwrite letters of apology identifying themselves as having lied about military service to the American Legions, ANVETS, Disabled Veterans of America, and several other VFW-type organizations. In addition, Pinsky mandated that every year during the suspended portion of their sentences, both men must stand out the Montana Veterans Memorial for 8 hours each day, each Memorial and Veterans Day, wearing a placard that reads, "I am a liar. I am not a veteran. I stole valor. I have dishonored all veterans."
What?
Stand outside their local VA on on Memorial Day and Veterans Day and wear placards around their necks that say, "I am a liar."
Wow. Hard to know what to say about that. Can a judge do that?
Yeah, I'm not Abe Hamilton III, but I'm saying yes because he did. Well, and they're going to get it, right?
From my understanding, and I'm not Abe either, but you know, judges have a pretty large range of discretion that they can use in sentencing and choosing punishments, etc. So this is a pretty crafty form of punishment that is definitely not a cookie-cutter case, but very interesting.
It is, and because it's not, I mean, if somebody literally harms somebody else, physical harm, like an assault or a stolen vehicle or something, then maybe the traditional, you're going to go to prison or jail for this much time. But if this is something that is more of a, it's just rude. And so I think you can get away with maybe a little more creative sentencing. Mm-hmm. I've heard of other judges that have done similar things.
Wow.
All
well,
right.
They won't do that again.
I would think not. over in the Netherlands, they are starting a trial today. This is a very disturbing trial to me. Netherlands is one of the leaders of the euthanasia movement, where terminal patients, or supposed to be terminal patients, can tell the doctors that they want to die on their own terms, and the doctors will administer a lethal concoction of drugs that will kill the person. There are supposed regulations in place there that makes sure that people that don't want to die won't die. But those are coming under a little bit of scrutiny right now. What happened was there was a 74-year-old woman who at one point in her life wrote out a will that said she wanted to be euthanized under certain circumstances. If she became disabled or if she was going to lose her mind, I think was one of those. Well, she came down with dementia. And so the doctors started putting together the plan to euthanize her, but then she changed her mind and said, "No, I don't want to die." So the doctor ended up spiking a coffee with a tranquilizer to put her to sleep or drowsy her up, and then her family had to hold her down while the doctor administered a fatal cocktail of drugs. And now they want to clarify the euthanasia law so that this doesn't happen again. It's just awful.
Her own, you're saying her own family held her down.
That's right.
Oh, that's.
Where did you get this story?
Depraved.
It's on Fox News. It was this morning, anyway.
Okay, in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands.
I never will forget the story I read about. You remember Kevorkian?
Yes.
Right.
Jack Kevorkian. I think the story was about him. If it wasn't about him, it was about a doctor who did the same thing he did. Is he still alive today?
No, I think he's
okay.
Joined his
back
patients.
I think this is back in the 80s. For those maybe too young to remember, it was a doctor who was well known for assisted suicide of terminally ill people.
He would do it against the law. I mean, he would go into states where it was illegal and still do it.
I remember reading about a lady in California, and again, I'm trying to think whether it was him or a doctor just like him. There weren't very many of them. Anyway, this woman said she had cancer, or diagnosed with cancer, and stage 3 or 4 or whatever, and so he euthanized her. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Killed her.
Murdered her. Well,
yeah,
doctor-assisted
suicide.
Right.
In the name of compassion for the person so they don't have to suffer. That's what they'll tell you. Mm-hmm. Well, as it turns out, they did an autopsy on this woman, and she didn't have the cancer. She didn't have it to the extent that the doctors had told her.
Mm.
In other words, she still had a great chance to survive, but not now because she's dead. Because this happened. This is 20 years ago. I just remember reading about that. Ray, how do you handle morally, ethically, from a Christian point of view? how do you handle that whole question of, you know, nobody wants to see anybody suffer, right?
Right.
So is it wrong to, folks, I'm asking a question here, so don't throw things at the radio. I'm asking a question to get an answer because it deserves an answer. Is it wrong to put somebody out of their suffering? We do that with animals, right? Because they have terminal cancer and the pain's too great. So we want to see them die so they don't have to suffer anymore. So we give them too much. We do like this doctor did. Isn't that the humane thing to do?
Look, there's a big difference between a doctor saying, we have done all we can do. There is another operation or there's another drug, but it's not going to help. There's a big difference between when death is imminent, deciding you don't want one more surgery or another chemotherapy that isn't going to help you, then big difference between that and affirmatively taking the position, I am tired of life, I don't want this anymore, please help me take my own life. It's the difference between night and day. The first one is death is coming. It's at my door. I do not want or need another surgery. I've chosen for myself. You can't help me anyway. Mm. The second is it's assisted suicide. It's morally wrong. Mm.
So assisting somebody with suicide, even if you are a doctor, you're saying that's morally wrong.
Sure. And there are cases in between. It's not as if it's a completely black or white issue, but we should understand that the deal coming from the Netherlands, Steve, when this woman evidently said she did not want euthanasia and her own family held her down while the doctor...
That's killing. That's right. Murder.
I think, Ray, the humane and the moral and ethical and biblical way to handle these things is we do value life from birth, well, from conception to natural death.
Natural.
So what we do is we put people in a hospice facility or send them home with drugs that will enable them to not feel
manage pain.
Sure.
It's a pain management thing. So they will die on their own. And I think, Ray, I would amend what you said. I agree with it, but I would amend it to say even if somebody is days from a death and there's no other surgeries, I think what you need to do is you need to give that person the pain medications, but it's still wrong for a doctor to terminate that life.
Yeah,
even
because
if it's only days
because
left.
Because the Christian position
because
has,
you're not God.
The Christian position has been to historically has been that we're for protecting life from the moment of conception to natural birth.
Natural death.
And the case about such as like where a family decides to remove what's called life support, that is natural death.
It is.
When you take off the falsified machines and the person's body does not continue.
Right.
That's natural death.
Difficult decision,
but natural death. But this is not natural death by any
means. It's unnatural death.
Correct.
What happens every time it seems that a society starts losing its respect for life, and this can be with abortion or it can be with assisted suicide or both, every other measure of compassion in that society starts going south. And all of a sudden you're ethically experimenting with other drugs that can do things. You're doing the embryonic stem cell research maybe, but you just see even in normal relationships, we just don't revere each other as much because we've decided we don't matter after a certain
time. And this
time.
Is why many Christians are against the expansion of government-run healthcare, is because the moment you allow government to take over the healthcare industry and how the money's disbursed, then they start rationing care.
It's about money.
You're going to have death panels.
Yeah, sure. And you have panels, bureaucrats deciding which grandmother gets treatment or not, or you know who's qualifies for the money, who's going to pay more into the system over time, which leads right back into this whole problem.
Yep.
Next story, Steve.
All right. Hey, I wanted to bring you the guy that's having a bad day. This is in Washington, D.C., and it's a sports reporter. And he was conducting an interview, and he was calling into a station, and he was doing his sports report. I wanted to listen to what happened. This is cut, what, 7, 8, 9? Yeah, there you go.
And then have the Capitals and the NHL essentially lie on his behalf. Dukes, I think I'm getting pulled over. This is awesome.
Are you serious, Rooster?
Yeah.
So you got a sports reporter calling in. Yeah, radio station, and he's getting pulled over.
His name is Chris Russell, and he was on the air, and all of a sudden. So, Ray, I guess it's good that you're – we know that you have a desk at your house, but
right.
There's nothing to keep you if you had the right connection from driving around Kansas City.
Yeah, but isn't it illegal to do that?
Well, that's why he got pulled over.
Okay.
What's he doing?
We're holding a cell phone and talking and driving at the same time.
Did he keep broadcasting while the
No, I think they left. They let him off the air. He ended up having to pay a $500 ticket.
Whoa.
Yeah. So and then he tweeted out somewhat sarcastically later. It said, "How dare that cop get in the way of my pontificating?" So anyway,
okay.
I've got one for you here. Tim,
okay.
Nissan has developed a golf ball that can automatically find the hole every time. It's got GPS guidance inside the ball. If you're on the green and you strike it in any direction, a little system will take over and take it to the hole and in.
Okay, if I'm going to use this ball,
yeah,
I'm not telling anybody.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Huh? So you only, and I would only pull it out like 5 or 6 times during the course of the round. Otherwise, I think
at least it would just not be fair.
At least the people I play
with. Well, you're going to tip people off.
Well, at least the people I play with are going to know pretty quick something's funny going on here because Tim never makes this many putts.
Huh? Suddenly you're going to be 25 under par.
Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, I see they have a video here or somewhere.
Well, you can't play with that ball anyway. And be a self-respecting golfer. Now, if you don't care anything about self-respect,
that's
you can
right.
play with it and probably win you some money.
Yeah.
If you're a betting man.
Well, there may be an alternative to traditional golf being everybody brings their manipulated golf balls, and whoever has the ball that gets in the hole the fastest, you know, then
that's
they
right.
win.
That's the best technology.
I'm going to bring it up for you here, Tim, after okay. the – after the show.
It's a beautiful idea.
You also had this, you going to show it to me? This golf ball, this GPS golf
we're gonna
ball?
Let's watch this video
on the radio.
Let's watch
the video on the radio.
Okay.
The 4-year-old approaches the ball. It hits the ball.
Hits the ball.
It's a long putt, probably 50, 60 yards. The ball is curling around. It might have a chance to go in the hole.
Oh, wow. You could... Now, I'll tell you what, you can have a lot of fun with that, though.
Yeah.
Because you watch the faces of your golfing partners when you make three long 30-foot putts in a row.
Yeah.
And they don't know you got this GPS. How do you dial this thing in, though?
You have a camera system that knows where the hole is.
Ah! Oh, well, Steve's got a picture of the video.
We're going to put this up on our Facebook
page. Now, they're going to be tipped off when the ball starts backing up.
It did, too, right?
It takes a 90-degree turn.
That's right.
Yeah.
We need this for basketball and football, too.
Yeah.
Right?
All right, Ray, thank you very much, brother.
You bet. Thank you, Tim.
Walker.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate your contributions, as I do Steve. Steve, thank you, brother.
My pleasure.
Brent Creeley ran the controls for us today and posted our stories on our Facebook page. And we thank Fred Jackson for being on with us last hour. So... we shall see you back here tomorrow, folks. Have a great day. Keep listening to AFR.